Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Jonathan Hutton of Hot Mike and Hutton and Withrow joins us now. Love the renovation to the show, Hutton. Big, big fan.
Hot Mike.
Hot Mike.
Yeah, I like it. Renovation is correct, Caroline. It's the same show. They gave us a revamp, and they're building a network out with a bunch of different shows. So it's going to be cool. And luckily for Chad and I, we're first up, and we went to New York last week. Luckily, it timed up with Madison Square Garden and the Vols for Chad and Clay. And I was, I guess, the only happy one in any way possible on the flight back.
Renovation, not a rebuild.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's the Titans' motto, okay? Yeah.
Exactly. And speaking of the Titans, Paul Kuharsky was on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, and he was asked, hey, do you think that the stadium has any impact financially on how the team is going to be built in the next few seasons? And honestly, I kind of thought, yes, it had. And it was frustrating to me. Say, hey, is your sights set on the stadium and not really more as building the team right now? Paul said, I thought that it was, but now being at the owners' meetings, it's not necessarily the case. What is your perception of the Titans and the financial situation that they're in now? And if the stadium isn't impacting the Titans and how they're building a team financially, then what is the plan with how they're going to build up this team for 2023, seeing they've gotten pieces on the cheap so far?
Yeah, I mean, the deadline is coming up for all teams to be financially within the parameters of the league. With cash on hand, what's liquid, what's not, all of it. So that's also part of the discussion about who's going to actually have the $6 billion to buy the Washington Commanders. The Titans are certainly within that scope. They're not going to liquidate everything, give it to the stadium, and then not be within the rules and framework of one of the 32 teams. So let's put that out there. There's not room to panic here. I do think they have to be, I mean, when you look at the finances and who they want to sign, Jeffrey Simmons being first on the list, and then what they're planning for long term. I mean, to me, if I'm running the organization and if I'm hiring a new general manager, Rand Carthon was brought in, guys, to build back this roster with its depth and make it competitive and more competitive than what it has been, even when they haven't had the depth necessary. And it's been the quote-unquote next man up. And it got to a point where that wasn't cutting it, right? We all saw it. But they also, like, if I'm running, I'm also saying, like, I want to be peaking roster-wise by the time we open that stadium. And while that seems like a long time away, the next few off seasons will set that up one way or the other. And based on the path that they were taking, they were not headed to that direction. So I do think it factors in from what they're doing. I don't think it factors in for how they spend their money, because unlike several teams that have gone out and just poured money into free agency, they didn't have the luxury of being the Chicago Bears with a rookie, not a rookie, but a quarterback on their rookie contract. They're paying Ryan Tannehill more than what Ryan Tannehill will get on the open market. In that regard, they have money locked up at two positions where they chose to go and make the team what it was, Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. They didn't pay A.J. Brown because that's not their identity. And now they have a chance to reframe that. But at the same time, they're still stuck with those two contracts as long as they're on the roster. They can make room on the roster, on the cap for the roster by moving those guys. But based on what I heard from Rand Carthon, they're not trading Derrick Henry. And who knows about Tannehill, because Lamar Jackson's out there.
Interesting. Do you think that there is do you think that Lamar Jackson's status has any implication on Ryan Tannehill and his future with the Titans?
Well, I just thought it was interesting how Vrabel answered the question. That's all. You know, he was very definitive a year ago when all the rumors started swirling about AJ. And they weren't rumors. I mean, he did take down all mentions on social media and all that stuff, right? But it did lead to what it led to. And Vrabel did say they're not trading him, like they're keeping him, and then they traded him. We've been over that. But the way he answered this was, yeah, Tannehill's the starter, but I'm not going to sit here and call anyone on the roster for September as we sit here in March. I just The way they've played this is they have their options open. And if I'm the Titans, if I'm any team, honestly, I'm waiting to see what falls to me in the draft before I pay Lamar Jackson more than what Baltimore would match. And I'm not even sure if the Ravens would match at this point, based on what Lamar Jackson wants. So, and I mean, he wants to be traded. So with all that in mind, I mean, I think it's a possibility, but financially, to your question, I don't think it makes a lot of sense long term.
Now, Hutt, it may not, you know, it's yet to be determined, you know, in this situation. But you brought up something interesting about the whole the stadium deal and them moving to the stadium. And I echo that sentiment because I've been on that bandwagon, it seems like, by myself for the longest, where this team, and you said it, the way this team was trending, they possibly were not going to be, you know, once they move into that stadium, they were not going to be trending in the right way because of older players, contracts, and everything else. So what happened to them the last two seasons may have been a blessing in disguise. It forced them now to get rid of sort of, you know, the players that were weighing them down with contracts. And then in doing that, I believe they want to slow play this in hopes to, before they move into that stadium, get their franchise quarterback, because I don't think they want to go into that stadium with someone else's quarterback, with a quarterback that has already been in the league 8, 9, 10 years, and then you go into a stadium and everyone's looking for you to win. You want to go into a new stadium, you know, a la Adelphia, a la Steve McNair, with your quarterback and win with your quarterback. I truly believe that's what they're thinking in a sense.
Yeah, and I mean, also look at the stacked AFC. Mm-hmm. If you just start, you're not competing with those teams until you have your franchise guy. There is a common thread with all of the teams that we would put at the top of the AFC for Super Bowl contention. And it starts at that position. There's no doubt. Tannehill has been good for the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in from the outside, and he provided exactly what they needed for what they were going to run offensively. And they I think the mentality has been, we're going to play great defense and we're going to be good on offense. Right. That's the bar, and they have a chance to change that with a franchise quarterback. Lamar Jackson can be that guy. He also fits the mentality of what they've been doing anyway. But I don't think financially it's the right path and course of action based on how it handcuffs you at other positions. And the Titans have so many question marks, even though they've done a decent job of – I mean, they went on the cheap, Caroline, to your point. But they also, to me, got the same type of production for what they were paying way too much for with other guys that they let go. So I don't think they've dropped off in production. I can't sit here and say they're drastically better either. And, you know, it's going to take more than one offseason to put that, you know, to rest. I mean, they had a good draft last year. I don't want to say that everything was doom and gloom. I think their draft class last year, as we sit here today, would be like a top 10 class for what we saw across the NFL, for where I think these players are going. But when you put everything together and you put all of the swings and misses on the offensive line, combined with the fact that Tannehill and Henry are going in the last year of their contract to where you don't owe them anything past this year, I wouldn't extend them and then take a cap hit later when you can be done with it after this season. And then after that, I mean, then you have a chance to really chart your course. And I think you could be competitive by doing that. I'm not saying throw in the towel. I'm saying just look ahead while also trying to be competitive and win games now.
Also, Hutt, you know, you said something else about this team resetting the identity. This is a chance for them to reset. You're right about that statement. But haven't they had several other times where they should have reset as an organization, meaning their identity? Even though Rand Carthon comes in and says you can't play Golden State Warrior football in late November, December, well, you got to be able to score a point before that and get yourself in a position where if you choose to play that way, you can, and you got some leeway, and you may be able to win some games like that. I just don't think this team, until they change and sort of get with the program in a sense of, this is a wide open passing league. Yes, you have to be able to run the football, but we've seen, whether it's Tampa, Kansas City, within the last 3 years, those teams are highly capable passing teams that can run the football when they need to. I think the Titans sometimes look at it the other way, where we got to run the football and passing is almost secondary.
But for the most part, I'm right on board with you. But what I saw in the 2020 season, mm-hmm. with a 4,000-yard passer and a 2,000-yard rusher, A.J. was a 1,000-yard receiver. Corey Davis should have been, but he missed two games because I think he could have played, but they held him out for the postseason with a hamstring tightness deal. Jonnu Smith and the combination of what they did at tight end gave them roughly 400 yards that season as well. I mean, I think they averaged like 26 points per game.
But then they go away from it.
Well, Arthur Smith got hired by Atlanta.
Yeah.
And they hired Todd Downing. Like, there was a drop-off in that area. But here's the other thing that happened. Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, it was time for them to get paid. And that goes all to my overriding point. Like, the money was in the backfield. The money was at quarterback moving forward. And they didn't have the money to keep either guy for what they thought they were. Now, Jonnu didn't do anything in New England, and Corey Davis has been just as hamstrung in New York. He's going to be a salary cap cut probably post June 1st, or he's going to be a part of this trade. Point being, they have a chance now with Treylon Burks to play the Corey Davis role, not in production, but he's going to be the quote-unquote older guy. They can draft another wide receiver. They need to hit on these guys, and that's what they did, and they paired players together that allowed the offense to be more unpredictable, more on third and four. You know, what are they going to do? On third and two, you know, they were throwing passes that season, and they were still productive in the run. That they haven't been that team. And even this past season, they weren't the running team, period, based on the offensive line play. So I do think they can put up points and have the mentality that they've had. I don't think Vrabel's going away from that. But I also think this is a chance to add in some things that maybe they haven't really accepted or taken in the way that maybe they have a chance to do now. I don't think they're going to rebrand everything and call it what it's something that it's not. Mm-hmm. But I do think they can add in more of a sizzle to what they're doing, much like they had under Vrabel with Arthur Smith a couple of seasons ago.
More from Jonathan Hutton coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And hey, you can join us and the Predators energy team at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs tomorrow for the Predators Road Watch Party as your Nashville Preds take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Stop by and enjoy Brewhouse South's 70 beers on tap, classic American menu, along with Cajun, Southwestern, and Island Comfort Food. That's 102.5 The Game and Preds Energy Team at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, is on with us now.
Hey, Hutt. Before we get back like at Madison Square Garden, I know, you know, Tennessee losing probably didn't help for a lot of the people locally here, but your thoughts on the venue?
Willie, I walk into the place and I'm immediately thinking about all the moments and concerts and, you know, just the Knicks, anything. I'm thinking about the fights and Muhammad Ali, and you sit down and you look around, and to me, what sunk in is I look at the ceiling. I don't know if you do this in arenas or not, but like, that was more describable of where I was based on the NCAA tournament stuff, which is very, they make everything sterile. And you can't do that at Madison Square Garden, no matter what you try to do to it. That's how I would describe it. I loved it. We were going to stay for the Saturday games, but ended up coming back early based on the results. But the crowd was good. And I was surprised that the crowd was as good as it was for FAU and Kansas State, quite frankly. I'm all on board with the Owls. I love their story. I love the fact that it's a 9 seed that won 30 plus games, now 35. And the way the crowd got behind them was really cool, especially considering they were coming off the overtime game the game prior with Kansas State.
How much do you think it affected the game, the crowd getting behind? Because we talk about that some, NCAA tournament upsets. That's part of the formula, right?
Yeah. I don't think it affected Tennessee, though. I just thought FAU executed and Tennessee down the stretch didn't. It was once they got up by 7 or 8 points in the second half, it just kind of felt like they took the air out of the sails of the Vols, and it should have been the opposite way. And on center stage, I think what the path for FAU is just as important as who they are and where they, you know, where they've been versus how much money they're spending on a program compared to others, and what the coach is getting paid compared to who's down the baseline from him or the sideline from him. I'm fascinated by the story and the path, because they said they were at the world's most famous arena and didn't bat an eye in either game. That to me is why I'm not counting them out for either game as they head to NRG Stadium.
Yeah, and the story, like you said, is pretty cool, because they don't have, from what I can tell, a bunch of, you know, hired gun transfers from Power 5 schools. It looks like a pretty regularly recruited guy with a coach that you told a great story about their coach.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is his first time. It's not like he's, you know, washed out some other program and, you know, got fired and trying to restart. This is an up-and-coming coach that just kind of came out of nowhere.
Dusty May is making $350,000 a year at Florida Atlantic, and he took the job and went and spoke to the team in the locker room right after he took the gig as head coach for the first time. And then he turns around, goes home, or his wife is there, I guess, after the presser, and he's crying, saying, "I feel like I've made a huge mistake. Like, I'm not ready for this. I'm in over my head. Like, I'm just not the guy yet." And now he's in the Final Four. Florida Atlantic spends about a little over $2 million on that program a year. And when you compare that to other programs that we're used to, including Tennessee, UConn spends over $16 million a year on their basketball program. And, you know, the results speak for themselves for the men's and women's program there. But in regards to Florida Atlantic, you know, the 9 seed and the path that they took, and they're known for shooting the three, and they haven't really shot the three well consistently through this tournament. And that's what intrigues me, is if they catch fire for what they're known for after already winning without doing what they're known for. I'm fascinated by the matchups and what it could mean for college basketball moving forward if one of these two teams wins, FAU or San Diego State.
Yeah, it's great stuff. John, the football quarterbacks always move up the draft board. It's pretty interesting. So just give me your thoughts. We were kicking around the mock draft yesterday that the ESPN was throwing around there. And, of course, it's one guy's opinion, really. But Anthony Richardson to the Titans, what are your thoughts?
It's a great – so Anthony Richardson to me is – and I know he's going to go higher than the guy I'm about to put in the boat with him, but Hendon Hooker. There are certain quarterbacks in this draft that I feel like need a little time. And while time is not on Hendon Hooker's side, it has to be that way based on his injury. And I mean that for his age. It's the opposite for Anthony Richardson. And there are a handful of teams that make a ton of sense based on their quarterback situation. You've got Tannehill here, and by keeping him on the roster now without using the cap space availability that you could move him and gain, I think it keeps options open for the quarterback they could add behind him. It's not Malik Willis. I think we know that. I understand why he's on the roster right now, but if you're at 11 and a chance to move up and get a guy like – with the high ceiling, to me, is why Richardson is worth it. He also has the lowest floor, to me, of the four quarterbacks being discussed. But the high ceiling is above any of the other three that are going in the first round, at least consensus-wise going in the first round, most of them top 10. I don't think the Titans get him at 11, But I do feel like the Titans are the most unpredictable team for where they sit and having the new GM and not really knowing, okay, are they going all in one more time with Tannehill? Are they not? Or what are they looking for this offseason and where are they trying to upgrade? If you bring in Richardson, it's a lot like the Bears treated Justin Fields. They signed Andy Dalton, and their team account that year tweeted out QB1. And then they drafted Justin Fields and doubled down on it, saying Andy Dalton was QB1. So it's not out of the realm of possibility they could do that here. I just don't think that Richardson's going to be around very long. By the way, Andy Dalton's now in Carolina. Let me put that out there. So if you're in love with what he could be, meaning Richardson, and you feel like he could be the franchise player a couple of years from now, maybe you make that pick within the top two or three picks of this draft, and I think they will. I think he's gone before the Colts could get him at four.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, what in the world are the Titans going to do at backup quarterback?
I think it's going to be a rookie.
Ooh.
That's my and it's not the rookie from last year. I think they will make it a competition in some way. But I absolutely would be drafting a quarterback and pairing them behind Tannehill, at least for as you start the season. I'm all on board with the idea that Tannehill's the starter this year, and then you don't owe him or Henry anything after this season, and you have a chance to develop your QB with, let's be honest, with the offensive coordinator that Vrabel tried to hire a couple of years ago when Arthur Smith left, but the Texans blocked them, and now he's got the guy. Albeit he may have wanted someone else and was waiting on someone else to chat with them, and that didn't come down, so they end back up with Kelly. So I like their options for the backup QB position, and if they're drafting a quarterback in the where they are at 11, that guy's going to be the starter by the end of the season, if not as we get going here based on how they move Tannehill.
D-May said yesterday that he thinks Stetson Bennett is going to go in the second round of the NFL draft. Should I check D-May's temperature?
That's my gotcha. Watch out. Who's could be?
Oh, come on. Okay, hang on. Uh-huh. Who's drafting Stetson Bennett in the second round, D-May?
Okay.
Help me here.
You got to hear me out quickly, and I'm going to make this very quick. Stetson Bennett, physically doesn't wow you. But I listened to Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel said, listen, when we're talking about quarterbacks, accuracy, leadership, toughness, those are the three things that he said. And beside those three quarterbacks, let's just say C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, and Hendon Hooker, I'm not even putting Richardson and Levis in there. Levis, it's a different story, but we know about Richardson. His accuracy needs a lot of work.
Yeah, but, yes, and he's young, and he needed another year, and he came out early. But he's the talk of the draft, so he did the right thing.
Absolutely. So you look at Stetson Bennett. He's a fighter. He's a winner. He's a leader. You look at his accuracy. Each year, he's gotten better. 2 years ago, they didn't ask him to win games. They didn't. They just said, throw it to the guys. Last year, he won games for them. He was the reason why they won games. If he's 2 years younger, he's in the mix now with those other guys. Maybe not Stroud and Bryce Young, but he's in the mix with Richardson and Levis and even Hendon Hooker because he's proven he's a winner. He's accurate. He does the little things, and he's athletic. He can get outside the pocket and run. He does the little things that quarterbacks need to do. The problem is he's overshadowed by such a great team. And they always look at Georgia. Well, anybody could have won at Georgia. Well, if that's the case, Aaron Murray should have won at Georgia a lot of years ago. The guys before Stetson Bennett should have won, but they didn't. Stetson Bennett was the guy that was a two-time, I mean, they won it back-to-back, in a sense, with the same quarterback. That's why I look at it. He's going to end up getting drafted a lot higher than what many predict.
Well, higher than what we predict, maybe, but I look at this and think you can get that guy as Mr. Irrelevant. You just described Brock Purdy.
But Brock Purdy didn't win two championships.
Well, I know. But the way you're describing Stetson Bennett, mm-hmm. all those qualities, I feel like I can get Brock Purdy later in the draft. That guy's going to have a statue in Athens, mm-hmm. to your point, which is crazy to think about considering they didn't even want him on the roster whenever he tried to walk on initially. It's an amazing story. I absolutely agree that he's drafted. I would not have said that a year ago at this time. I just don't think it's that high. Second round is, man, that is a reach for a guy that, to me, at best, is a backup. How many years is he a backup before he gets his chance? You know, like, and I realize we've had tons of stories at any position, and everyone will point to Brady as that story. But there are many others across the league over the history of this league. But I would draft another position at a much higher grade than before I would take Stetson Bennett on day two.
Hey, listen, Hutt, I'm with you, but don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if he is a second
you know
round
what?
Pick,
Here's what
late
you're
second round pick.
Here's what you're saying, Mace. You're mm-hmm. saying go throw $5 on the odds mm-hmm. at Superbook. That's what you're saying. It's worth
it's
putting
worth
$5
it.
Out there to see if you can hit.
Hell, put $100 down. Might as well.
Well, I mean, I don't have your Baltimore contract. So.
Derek Mason, president of the Stetson Bennett Fan Club. Hutton, we appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Thank you so much, guys. I always enjoy it.
Yep. All right, thanks, Hutton. You can check out Jonathan Hutton and Chad Withrow on a hot mic with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick.com. But coming up next, the people have spoken, or at least NFL GMs and coaches, 10 of them, have spoken about Lamar Jackson. And we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.